And I was separated from alcohol the last time by the grace of God in December 28th, 1989. And for that I'm very, very grateful. What happened in my early recovery was, because I'm an alcoholic, I had the spiritual malady. And we're going to be talking a lot about that tonight. Basically, what that is that's the unmanageability of life. I was prey to misery and depression. I was restless, irritable, discontented. I suffered from resentments and fears and guilt and remorse and all those type of things. And I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. all the time. I mean, every day. But I see being the real alcoholic that I am. Meetings and not drinking was not enough to treat my alcoholism. I needed that personality change at depth sufficient to recover. I needed the spiritual awakening that they talk about in the 12th step. And what happened with me was a friend of mine had got a hold of a couple of Joe and Charlie tapes. I bet you everybody in this room has heard about Joe and Charlie. And this is about 1992. Late 91, early 92, and he gives me these tapes, and he said, "Hey, here, you listen to these. You might like them." He was more into the Louise Hay positive affirmation stuff at the time, so he was just kind of like forcing them off on me. And I listened to them, and let me tell you, they upset me, okay, because they held a mirror up to me. They told me I had no program. And this is like Mr. AA going to a meeting every night, sponsoring, making coffee, I'm a secretary, I'm driving people to meetings, and I'm bringing meetings into hospitals, okay? Well, what do you mean I have no program? So I put the tapes away in a huff, you know. But I'll tell you what, one thing I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is the truth will haunt you. And if Dave and I disturb you anytime over the weekend with some of the things we say, try not to get mad at us personally. If we disturb you about your alcoholism, please just consider where the disturbance is coming from and why. All right, because I was very disturbed by these Joe and Charlie tapes, but what I was disturbed about was some shortcomings that I had. I was not working a program. As my spiritual condition got worse, I picked the tapes back up about a year or so later. And there was not a hotbed of big book recovery in my area at this time. As a matter of fact, there was one or two people that were talking about the big book, and they were shunned. You know, it's a real shame, but here comes that guy with the big book, you know. Don't sit too close to him. He's a fanatic. So this is real, you know, anybody that was really trying to carry the message was kind of branded back in my area at this time. So anyway, I recognized somewhere the truth in these tapes. I recognized that I needed something. There was something wrong with my spiritual condition. I picked the tapes back up. I pulled the big book out, and I started on what I call my road of recovery. I date my sobriety December 28th, 1989, but I date my recovery from when pencil hit paper in a fearless and thorough moral inventory. As imperfectly as I worked the program, I continued to try to work the program. Dave and I hooked up about a year and a half or 2 years ago or so. We recognized that we were in the fellowship of the Spirit together, and we kind of became allied in doing the 12-step work that we do. And, you know, for better or worse, here we are tonight, and I'm very, very grateful to be here. I picked this thing up. I said, "Dave, look at the company we're in here." You know, Wally P. is doing the Back to Basics group April 14th. Dick B. from Hawaii is doing By the Power of God Big Book and Big Book groups May 12th. And then there's another Big Book study by the Atlantic group. I've heard they're like the Pacific group of the East Coast. So, I mean, I'm very, very grateful and proud to be here tonight. And with that, I don't think I have anything else.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic. And like Chris talked about, there's a couple of little maintenance items we need to talk about. First one I want to talk about is this thing. This is a study edition of the Big Book. when the first edition of the Big Book went out of copyright, a bunch of drunks said, hey, went to World Service and said, hey, would you guys print a Big Book that had some blank spots so we could take notes? Because you fill up all the margins and everything. And World Service shot them down. They said, fine, we'll start our own nonprofit corporation. We'll publish them and at our cost. Won't make any money from it. And that's what they did. I highly suggest you get one of these copies for several reasons. One, every paragraph is numbered, and it makes it a lot quicker because we're going to go through a lot of material. And if I say 60:2, you know to go to page 60, second paragraph, and it's listed right there. And instead of trying to write notes, all you have to do is whip out a highlighter and highlight 60:2. And you know there's something buried in that paragraph that was talked about. And there's a philosophy that Chris and I both abide by. Is we're not here to teach you anything. We're here to expose you guys to the information that you may not have seen before so that you guys will go back and take a look at this stuff on your own and have your own experience. A guy that I really admire that uses the expression all the time, a guy named Mark Houston, says, don't let anybody read your Big Book for you. And that includes me. Don't let me read your Big Book for you. Go back, take your Big Book out. If there's something you hear here that you haven't heard before, you're going to get a guide tomorrow. It's a 28-page guide over what we're covering. All right? It covers everything that we talk about. So you don't even need to take notes, but you need to be familiar with what we're talking about, and it makes it a lot easier. The other reason that I suggest these things is there's gray pages. This is a copy of the original multi-let that was sent out before the big book was published. You get to see exactly how the big book has changed. And in the forward, it says this book has basically stayed the same. It hasn't. There's a lot of changes from the multi-let to this, particularly talking about God. There was too many yous and musts and have-tos. They took out a lot of that stuff. But that's what Bill and Bob got sober on, you know. They didn't have any choice. They were backed into a corner. They were hopeless drunks. And I think it's worth taking a look at. The other reason I like it is in the very, very back, there's a concordance. You got a topic, you remember something, you can't remember where it is in the big book, go to the topic, boom, you can find it in a heartbeat. And I travel for a living, and one of the things I like about it, in the very, very last three pages, every intergroup phone number in the world. So it's a dynamite book. They just raised their prices up to $6, so it's still a pretty good value. The neat thing about it is, that I really like about it, is you have plenty of room to take your own notes. So if you can't afford $6, come see me. If you want to just borrow it for the weekend, all I ask is you don't write in it. You know, there's a can back there to throw the money in, and there's extra cases underneath the table. So that's that. Rules of engagement. This is a spiritual body. You know, and it comes from anytime you get two drunks working on steps together, talking about the steps, every group has its own flavor, you know. This is your workshop. We're just up here facilitating it. You know, that's it. So if you have questions, raise your hand. The only thing I'm going to ask is we'll turn on the mic and hand you the mic so that it gets caught on tape. You know, there's nothing worse than listening to a tape and you hear somebody in the background going, you can't understand what they're talking about. So we're going to do that. We're going to be doing a lot of fun. We're going to show you, for example, that inventory is fun. People that are afraid of four steps, we're going to have a hoot. We're going to be laughing and joking and clowning around. And there's people that have seen us do that, who have been victims of that. And it really is a lot of fun to see how alcoholics can react to each other. So I talked about the microphones. Coffee breaks. I know there's smokers here. If you look at the schedule of events, there's breaks every hour. We built them in on purpose. I apologize for the outlines. I'm in the military, in the reserves. And it's in military time. So if you don't know what 2145 is, come up and talk to me. I'll explain it to you, you know. So all those breaks are that way. My story is, the way I got into this was, I got sober at a young age. I got sober when I was 19. I've been sober since December the 5th, 1981. And a great sponsorship when I came in. I didn't listen to it, you know. I came in, I got enough of the program that the pain started to wear off. And my ego started to rebuild, and I stopped doing what they telling me to do. You know, I had sponsors that the answers are in the Big Book. Read the Big Book. I did that, and I would have sat on my head if they told me to do that. But 3 months into the program, I was more interested in drinking Coke and smoking cigarettes and eating Twix and checking out the women than what was really going on in that Big Book. I could have cared less. You know, I was an A for all the wrong reasons, and I managed to put together time. How, I don't know. You know, the grace of God. And I got to the point where I was about 10 years sober, and I was literally debating whether to blow my head off or come back and do what I knew I was supposed to be doing the whole time, you know. And so I came back in, I went back into the big book, and I was still afraid to talk about the big book, because I knew, and I'm in the seminary of Christendom, big book thumpers are branded. You do not talk to big book, you know. And it finally got more important to me to save my life, you know, get with people who knew the recovery program, that were talking about praying and meditating, what this program was really founded on, and not help kill the new alcoholic when it comes through the door. You know, I was 12-stepping guys out of the 12-and-12. I mean, have you ever tried to write a 4-step out of the 12-and-12? Extremely difficult. There are no columns. They don't even discuss them, you know. There's some great information in there, you know. It is a textbook, but it's designed to go with the big book. Our program is found in the big book. So I got started doing these workshops basically as an amend, you know. Once I realized the error of my ways, I went back and took all the guys that I had taken through with the 12-and-12, and all of their lives were falling apart the same way mine was. God only knows why they were attracted to what I had, because looking back on it, I would not have wanted what I had at the time. And I started taking them off to anybody that wanted to. A couple of them looked at me and said, I don't want what you have now. See ya. And that's okay, you know. It takes all kinds. I'm very, very passionate about the big book. Please do not hold it against me. Listen to the message, you know. A lot of times people look at me, and because I'm passionate about it and I get excited and I've had a great experiences with it, they say, oh, he's better than everybody else. No, no, no. I have clay feet just to say I'm just another drunk, you know. Listen for the message. Don't hold it against the messenger, you know. And it's been recently brought back to me. AA takes all kinds. It takes the kind of guy that does step 1 and step 12. I firmly believe that, because I've seen people come in, work with that kind of guy, and they stay sober. That's not me. I don't believe that's Chris. Chris and I are mad dog drinkers. You know, we were beaten. There was no place to go. We were literally dead when we got dragged in here. It was our last choice. We didn't come in here of our own volition. It was really that or die, you know. I have to work my program the same way. I'm a mad dog A. I work this program hard, and I call it raising the bar. And I challenge all of my sponsees to raise the bar on me, you know. If I do it to them, I expect them to do it to me, because they're going to help save my life. So that's what I'm going to be doing with you guys. I'm going to be raising the bar. I'm going to present some stuff here, and Chris is going to help me. And we're going to show some stuff here that you may not want to look at, you may not have heard before. Compare it against your own experience. What does your experience say? Don't believe what we're saying. Say, what does the big book say? This is what our founders did. And how does your own drinking experience compare to them? You know, don't be surprised, you know, if you start to hear some things that really twist your insides. Whatever you do, don't believe. I see people get up and they walk out and they go off, and you know it. This process is better if you don't even start it. If you're going to leave, get up and leave right now. Because if you're going to start the process, you've got to finish the process. And what we're basically going to do, we're going to do what Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson did in the very beginning. We're going to talk about how to 12-step somebody. From step one, and what are the pieces of step one. I'm an airline pilot. That's what I do for a living. I fly for the military, and I fly for an airline. I needed AA in the form of a checklist. I needed to be able to go step one, A, B, C, D. So that's what I did. I went through, and I built checklists, you know. You know, and you'll see that in the work guide tomorrow. But I kept coming across things in this book that were directly contradictory to what I was hearing in meetings. People were saying stuff with time, and I was kind of going, well, I didn't drink that way. That doesn't work for me. But everybody's sitting there shaking their heads when I hear it at an AA meeting. There's a lot of cliche and half-truth floating around. So I've spent a lot of my time, literally thousands of hours, digging through the big book. And this workshop, I've added in a lot of our history. We will be talking about all of our history books that nobody ever wants to read. AA Comes of Age, Pass It On, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I even went back into some of the stuff that you're not even supposed to look into, like Lois Remembers, you know. Bill Wilson was a drunk. Lois, she was an artist, and she kept diaries. I believe what she says, because she's got a hard copy. Bill Wilson, you know, has a little bit of twisted memory of what he can take through the fog, you know. There's some really good stuff out there, and stuff that you've never heard before, probably, I hope. So don't be surprised if it gets inside and it kind of twists you a little bit. Do not be surprised, and I tell this to all the guys that I work with. When I take somebody through, don't be surprised if you wake up tomorrow morning and you realize that you've had a drunk dream. It happens. Somewhere along here, you will probably have some thoughts from the subconscious that will blow the surface. Don't be surprised if you have resentments that you have completely forgotten about that come popping up. You know, we've been holding them down for a long time. And it's possible. My last inventory that I did, my inventory I did last year with Chris, I went through. The youngest resentment I had was 20 years old. It took that long for it to bubble up through, and those harms. The longer you're sober, the more you remember. The inventory I did when I was 6 months sober, that was when I was 6 months sober. I couldn't remember hardly anything. I was brain damaged, you know. The inventories that I do now, I can remember a lot more, and I've had a lot more experience. And that's one of the reasons we're supposed to work with newcomers. When you're working with a new guy, and you're looking across and you see the pain in his eyes, and he tells you a story that you have experienced, but you buried so deep you want to forget about it, never think about it again, comes rushing to the front. That is a gift, because now you get to clean that stuff up and be free. You don't have to carry that baggage around. So don't be surprised if Chris and I have this nagging effect and we twist people a little bit sometimes. It is intentional, you know, because we love you enough not to kill you, to help you get through this stuff. And the reason we can do that is we're going to show you how to go through this stuff armed with your own experience and a big book that you can get free of this crap. It would be torture if we were just to do that and walk away and not tell you the real answers, you know. But I'm going to show you with my experience, and I'm sure Chris is going to share his experience, and whatever your problem is, we'll be able to work it through, you know. There are people in this room right here that are not AA. This is an open meeting, you know. I think that's great. And as I said, it's a spiritual body, so please participate. There'll be certain times, like tomorrow afternoon, we're going to be asking for audience participation, you know. So if you have any resentments that you don't know how to deal with, you want to talk about, by all means, Chris and I will help you deal with them. You know, the only requirement is it'll be done on tape, and we'll have fun with it. We'll have a blast with it. Things that you say, well, if you think you got one of these resentments that I'm absolutely 100% in the right, they're wrong, please bring it here. If you got a relationship, particularly, I love the women. When the women have a relationship issue and they're mad at their boyfriend or their husband, bring it on. We love those. Because I get to see myself through her eyes and what I do in my marriage and in my relationships. I kind of go, well, you know what? I'm guilty of doing that. I got to go write some inventory. Because to me, I'm not afraid of inventory. The inventory is fine. It frees me. That's where I get peace and serenity. So anyway, one of the things that is kind of uncommon that Chris and I do is we have believed that the business of AA is not about not drinking. The business about AA is about finding a relationship with a power which will keep you from not drinking. So one of the big things we're going to do, and we're going to ask you if you want to participate, you don't have to. If you can't, if you want to, please, by all means. We're going to be talking a lot about prayer and meditation throughout the weekend. You're going to hear it over and over and over again. We're going to show you where it comes from. We're going to share our experience with it. So why not, since this is a spiritual body, why don't we be kind of quiet? And something the alcoholics don't like to do, we'll be quiet for a second. Try to turn off, as Mark Houston says, the chatter of a thousand monkeys. Try to get your insides quiet. And then we're going to do something called the set-aside prayer. They do it in the West. You hear it a lot of times. And it's really the thing the Big Book talks about over and over again. It's like 15 places it says, lay aside your prejudice. Well, what is prejudice? It's a preconceived idea. Lay aside everything you think you know about AA. Why don't you just put it aside so you can have a new experience with this program and this Big Book? You know? Lay aside what you think about the steps, your higher power, what this experience... I mean, we all have preconceived notions about what this workshop is going to be. Put those aside and have a new experience. That's what this whole thing about it is. This workshop is about having a new experience, you know. And Chris and I, we laugh about it. We call it full contact AA. We are going to, if you stick around, we're going to show you that there's a lot of this program. We're going to show you how to get the promises to come true. And they're not just the basic promises. There's phenomenal promises. Matter of fact, I even forgot it. There's going to be a book I'll bring tomorrow. I have a very good friend of mine here tonight. He says, I'm not an AA, I'm a AAA. He says, I'm AA anal. Because one of the things I did was, I went through the Big Book, and I pulled out all the promises by step, and I stopped counting at 225. We talk about the ninth step promises. There's some promises in this book that blow that away, and that's one of our jobs this weekend, is to show you guys the promises, and show you how to get them to come true, you know? Like how to get power, peace, serenity, you know, peace of mind. That's the stuff I've been searching for my entire life, and we're going to show you where that stuff is located and where it is in the steps, you know? So why don't we get quiet for a second, and then I'll say a set-aside prayer for the whole group, and then we'll kick this thing off, because I'll read a preamble, which you probably have never heard. It comes from an original archive, and I got it from Chris, and he'll have to explain it, where it came from. But it's one of the original preambles that you will never hear in a regular AA meeting anymore, and you'll understand why. But it's the kind of stuff that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob are talking about. So why don't we get quiet for just a second, and we'll be there. Father, we ask that you come and be in this room with us in our presence this weekend and give us the faith and the courage to set aside everything we think we know about this program and the Big Book and the 12 Steps and for us to have a new experience. Lay aside our prejudice and our fears and give us the courage to go through and have a new experience with all of these things. Keep us safe and protected as we go on this journey. In your name, Father, amen. All right. So, Chris, with you.
All right. What I know about this original preamble is an elder in my home group handed it to me. Said, you probably like this. And I do. I really do. One of the things they do in biblical studies is they try to go to the earliest possible known text. That's how you get to the earliest layer of truth. And I'm a real big fan of the earlier AA writings. As a matter of fact, Dave made brief mention of the original manuscript. I'm a great fan of the original manuscript. They took a lot of bite out of it when they circulated it among the clergy and the psychiatric community. They took a lot of the impact out of it. For good or bad, I won't debate that. But it really hits you in the head in a way that the Big Book just doesn't. It softened up a lot of the terminology. Well, this is one of the preambles. All I know is it comes from the Florida archives. That's all I know about it. But here we go. We are gathered here because we are faced with the fact that we are powerless over alcohol, unable to do anything about it without the help of a power greater than ourselves. We feel that each person's religious views, if any, are his own affair. The simple purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to show what may be done to enlist the aid of a power greater than ourselves, regardless of what our individual conception of that power may be. In order to form a habit of depending upon and referring all we do to that power, we must at first apply ourselves with some diligence. By often repeating these acts, they become habitual, and the help rendered becomes natural to us. We have all come to know that as alcoholics we are suffering from a serious illness for which medicine has no cure. Our condition may be the result of an allergy which makes us different from other people. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar permanently cured. The only relief we have to offer is absolute abstinence, the second meaning of AA. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Each member squares his debt by helping others to recover. An Alcoholic Anonymous is an alcoholic who, through application of and adherence to the AA program, has forsworn the use of all alcoholic beverage in any form. The moment he takes so much as one drop of beer, wine, spirits, or any other alcoholic beverage, he automatically loses all status as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. AA is not interested in sobering up drunks who are not sincere in their desire to remain sober for all time. I love that. But it's only one day at a time. Not being reformers, we offer our experience only to those who want it. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and on which we can join in harmonious action. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our program. Those who do not recover are people who will not or simply cannot give themselves to this simple program. Now, you may like the program or you may not, but the fact remains it works and it is your only chance to recover. There is a vast amount of fun included in the AA fellowship. We'll probably have some of that later. Some people might be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity, but just underneath there lies a deadly earnestness and a full revelation that we must put first things first with each of us, the first thing being our alcoholic problem. To drink is to die. Faith must work 24 hours a day in and through us or we perish. In order to set our tone for this meeting, I ask that we bow our heads in a few moments of silent prayer and meditation. I wish to remind you that whatever is said at this meeting expresses our own individual opinions as of today and as of up to this moment. We do not speak for AA as a whole, and you are free to agree or disagree with anything which might not be reconciled with what is in the AA Big Book. If you don't have an AA Big Book, it's time you bought one. I love that. Read it, study it, live with it, loan it, scatter it, and then learn from it what it means to be in AA.
A little bit different, huh? You know? I love that that preamble. It's just, it kind of sets the tone. There's been so much change, you know, and for good reasons or bad reasons. Who knows? I'm not here to judge that. I just know that one of the goals in my sobriety is to try to get back to what was this program that I know works. I know that Bill Wilson never had a drink for the rest of his life. I know that Dr. Bob never had another drink for the rest of his life. My goal is to get as close to those two guys as I can. I'm going to follow as close to their footsteps and do exactly what they did, because it's known. I know that it works. You know, till death do us part, you know, this planet. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I, like Chris said, get back to the original stuff. What was originally on the table? What were they originally working with? What were they talking about? What were they doing? So one of the things that we need to start with is the Big Book. I use the study edition. It's just a little bit different. It's a leather-bound version. It's the exact same thing as the Red Book, except it's covered in leather. And one of the first things I like to take a look at is the fact that you'll notice that there's a big circle and triangle on it. It's one of the first things that has changed. AA has decided not to defend our copyright for the circle and triangle. We will talk about that some more tomorrow. And it's a pretty important thing. But you'll notice that it's not on most of the big books you'll see now. They started taking it off the third edition. This is what the current third edition looks like on the dust cover. Most people take their dust covers and throw them away. I don't know why drunks do that, but we just don't like to keep it. There's some really great stuff on here. For one thing, here's one of the very first things we need to take a look at. It's right there on the front of the dust cover. It says, this is the third edition of the Big Book, the basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous. What does that mean? It means it's the same as like a book that was around when we were in third grade, you know, some spot run. A textbook is a book that's written that's designed to transmit some information. Not that you're going to learn that information from reading it, but you're going to learn it from doing it. Take a look at it, read what it says, and try it for yourself and have your own new experience with it. Critically important. We have another textbook. Nobody ever likes to read the foreword of the 12 and 12. On page 17, it says in the 12 and 12 that it's a textbook. And the specific purpose of that textbook is to amplify what's in this book. So if you're only reading the 12 and 12 and you haven't read this book, you have no idea what our program is. You only know what the amplification of our program is, you know, and that'll become important when we start getting into the four steps, you know, and get into the upper steps. There's some great stuff in the 12 and 12, but I understand why now that it's designed to highlight and emphasize what we get in our original textbook, you know. Inside the dust cover on the leaves, that nobody, I don't know, hardly anybody that's even read it. I didn't probably read it until I had maybe 10 or 12 years of sobriety on here. There's some statistics, and it says, originally published in 1939 when AA membership numbered only 100, the first edition of this book went through more than 300,000 copies. The second edition appeared in 1955 when membership had reached past 150,000. What does that mean? That means if you go to the forward of the second edition, it says, it doesn't just say 150,000 members, it said 150,000 recovered alcoholics. So between when the first edition of the Big Book showed up and the second edition, they took a snapshot. And they said, okay, let's take a look at our membership. What's been going on? Well, in that time frame, we put out into the world 300,000 big books, and we had 150,000. We only had 3 million recoveries. What changed? We're starting to get away from the big books, and we're starting to get less and less recovered alcoholics into this program. You know? Put your own finger on it, you know? I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to give you some information, you know? Why do we have a big book? Pass it on. On page 180 it says, we needed a book that would tell the story to the world and that would also prevent garbling or distortion of the message. That's one of the things that we run into all the time. The message is getting distorted, it's getting garbled. You know? It also says that by setting forth a clear statement of recovery program, a book could prevent distortion of the message. It could be sent or carried by alcoholics into distant cities. So they had two purposes for writing this book. One was so that you could send it out because they couldn't go to all the cities to make sure that everybody in the world had access to it. And the other one was to make sure that the original message of AA didn't get distorted or garbled. All right? Alcoholics Anonymous comes of age, page 124. It says, recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us. We wish to preserve it in full strength, our means of survival. Well, if this is designed to prevent distortion, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to the original text of the Big Book, because I don't want the message distorted. You know? And you'll see, that's one of the reasons I use the study edition. You can go back to the original text and look at how it's already distorted from the originally way it was written until the way it was actually sent out. You know? There's already some distortion that occurred. You know? When we start talking about statistics and stuff, let me reemphasize, the only requirement that you're going to need for this weekend is an open mind. You know, you're going to start hearing some stuff that may or may not jive with what you hear in regular AA meetings, you know. And we're not here to present knowledge. Compare everything we say to your own experience as we go through. So, on the dust cover of the, not the dust cover, the first page, the title page of the Big Book, it says, the story of how 1,000 men and women have recovered from alcoholism. You notice it says recovered, ED. That's one of the big controversies you'll hear in AA all the time. I'm recovering, versus people who say, I'm recovered. Well, what's the difference? Has anybody ever heard the difference between recovered versus recovering? If you go further on into the Big Book, it says that we are recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. It doesn't say that we're ever going to be cured. As a matter of fact, it says the exact opposite. It says we'll never be cured. You know, that's one of the things that we're going to hear the emphasis. Which state are you in? Compare it to your own life. Are you a recovered alcoholic or are you recovering alcoholic? Where is your sobriety? Check it against yourself. And that's one of the big things we're going to be talking about. I know in the study editions you guys don't have these pages. It starts with the foreword of the first edition, but anybody that's got a regular Big Book can start with the preface. It says on the preface again, about the first paragraph down, it says, this book became the basic text for our society. The first portion of this volume describing the AA recovery program. That tells me that the program of AA is in this book. It's in the first portion of the volume. What are they talking about? They're talking about the Big Book up to the story. That's the first portion of the volume. And they don't bother to tell you that until you get back to the story. You know, and they say in the back by the story, they say that the program of AA was up to this point. Alright? You guys do have this page in your study editions if you have your Big Book with you. Page XII, Roman numeral 8, forward from the first edition. Here's what I was talking about. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. They're going to tell us three times what the purpose of this book is, and it's a sales job. Slowly but surely, they start to change what the purpose of this book is. And you're going to start off by saying, well, the purpose of this book is to show you how we've recovered, you know. And then later on, eventually they're going to get to the point that they're going to say that the purpose of this book is to show you how you find your way to God, basically, in paraphrase, which blew my mind. If they opened it up with the purpose of this book is to show you the way to God, I would have walked out and probably died, you know, because I was prejudiced against God, even though I had no relationship with God. We already talked about the 150,000 versus the 300,000. Let's go to the next page, to XIV, Roman numeral 14. Second sentence down. It says, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Why do I mention that? Because we've taken that word out. In our traditions now, it says, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Well, when Bill and Bob got sober, you had to have some honesty, some self-honesty to realize, hey, I'm licked. I'm here. How many people in this room have been in an AA meeting when you see a newcomer come walking in and you just know in your heart of hearts by looking at that person that they aren't honest? They're there to get the judge off their back or to get their wife off their back or to please somebody, but they certainly aren't there and they're not honest. And how many of those people that aren't honest that you see get sober and stick around? The recovery rate is very, very, very low for those kind of people because they don't have the honesty, you know. We'll find later on that Bill Wilson actually says that honesty is a requirement, step one. Which brings me up to a point. Where is step one and two in the Big Book? You know? In the Big Book, when you get up there, it says, we are now at step three. And from that point on, Bill tells us exactly what step you're on. But he left out where step one and two is. Well, if he tells you where step three is, everything up to that point must be steps one and two. But how do you sort it out? Well, that's our job. We're going to help you sort it out. And if you really take a look at it, it's in there. All the pieces of step one are in there and all the pieces of step two are in there. And hopefully we're going to show it to you in a way you've never really taken a look at it as we go through. Over on the forward to the second edition, you'll notice the forward to the first edition starts out with we. Forward to the second edition says we about six or seven times through the forward to the second edition. But the forward to the third edition does not say we anywhere in the forward to the third edition. Does anybody have a clue as to what, why? I have my own idea. Go ahead.
Bill didn't write it.
Bill was dead when the forward to the third edition was published. Very kind of cold, and it's not like a we fellowship anymore. It's just like, here's some facts, you know, take it or leave it, this is what we got, you know. That's one of the reasons I like the forward. I'm kind of prejudicial to Bill's writing. I really like the forward to the first and forward to the second edition. But on page XVI, the third sentence, fourth sentence down, it says, Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism who is now accredited as no less a medical saint by AA members. Why would Dr. Silkworth be a medical saint? You know, St. Patrick's Day, that's pretty high status. You know, because he gave us a third of the recovery that was missing in the old times. You know, in the Washingtonians, they had pieces. There are other groups throughout history that had pieces that might have worked had they stepped to the primary purpose, to form a program of recovery. Well, in AA, we have three major pieces. We have a physical craving, a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady. One of those pieces, the physical craving, came from Dr. Silkworth. And his status is elevated here in the forward and second edition as a medical saint. You know, and we'll talk about Dr. Silkworth before we get into the doctor's opinion. Right? On the next page over, on XVII, on Roman numeral, 17, the first sentence on the page, says it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. One of the things that we're going to do this weekend is we're going to look at sentence structure, believe it or not. Bill Wilson was trained as an attorney. He studied as to become a lawyer, passed the bar, and then everyone picked up his degree. He said, once he did it, he said, I can do it, like a typical alcoholic. He never followed through and got the diploma. He just said, that's it, I'm done. But he writes like an attorney, you know, and it's my belief, my experience of reading this work, he chose his words very carefully. And so one of the things that I've done is I've gone back and I dug up a 1926 dictionary, because that's the kind of definitions of the words that Bill was using. Now, have the word definitions changed? Yes, they have. What used to be the definition number one or definition number two in 1926, you'll probably find around eight or nine today. For example, he's talking about being in the Mayflower Hotel, and he's worried about, before he met Dr. Bob, he's worried about getting drunk, and he hears the gay crowd in the bar. Do you think he's talking about a gay bar? No. The words have changed. The meanings have changed. The meanings have changed in order, you know. So one of the things that I'm going to do is, a lot of times I'll be talking about the meanings of the words. What is strenuous? It means eagerly pressing or urgent, zealous and ardent, vital, of utmost importance, essential, necessary to the maintenance of life. In other words, our life depends on working with other alcoholics. You know? And I'm not going to embarrass you and ask you to show hands, but just think to yourself, when was the last time you went on a 12-step call? When was the last time you took somebody through the steps? And here's our co-founder saying, your life depends on you helping somebody through the steps. Pretty important, you know? I go to meetings all the time, on a regular basis, where I know there's people in there with 40 years plus of sobriety. Newcomer walk in the door, and they all walk around and they talk to their friends. These little clicks all of a sudden form, and everybody's got a conversation, and nobody wants to go up and talk to the drunk. And where does he end up? Chris and I, the poor guy, you know. And what do? We probably pull him off on one of our sponsees. We spread the wealth around, because we realize that that's our life. That's the life for an alcoholic. That's maintaining your life, is carrying the message, you know. And permanent, talking about permanent recovery, that's my goal. I want permanent recovery. It says, under permanent, continuing or enduring without fundamental or marked change, lasting and stable. Well, how's your recovery? Every time we get to a statement like that, we're going to be doing this. One of the tools we're going to use, personalize this book. It was written in 1938, you know. It reads like it was written in 1938. Turn the statements into question. When it says, we put your name into the sentence, put your names into the paragraph, make this book come alive for you, and all of a sudden you realize, 1938 is today. So ask yourself, how is your sobriety? Is your sobriety stable? Is it going to be lasting? You know, or are you on one of these emotional roller coasters like I was at 10 years of sobriety? I mean, I was wigged out half the time. You know, I used to judge my sobriety, and this is no exaggeration, about how many times in the week I'd get my car airborne. I was a maniac. I was a lethal weapon with a 3,000-pound weapon. I was driving, I would cut people off, and I'm from Jersey, you know. Turn signal does not mean I'd like to come over. It means I am coming over, whether you like it or not, you know. And I treated life that way. I was spiking in anger all the time. My sobriety when I was 10 years sober was not lasting, and it was not stable. And I would have died had I stayed there. It was a spiritual bottom for me. So ask yourself, how's your program? You know? Over on page XIV, on the number 19, as we discover the principles by which an individual alcoholic could live, we're going to be talking about principles for you to live. What are principles? The perfect thing. The perfection. Can you reach a perfection? No. But there are goals, and we're going to talk a lot about this weekend, about getting vision in your life. Setting goals to strive towards. And it says these are principles by which an individual alcoholic can live. So I guess it means even though they're principles, if we strive towards them, we're going to find a way of life. At least that's what it's telling me, you know. Some really interesting statistics on the next page. So let me go back to AA Comes of Age. On page 310, it says, Alcoholics Anonymous claims a recovery rate of 75% of those who really try their methods. At the end of year one, we had 5 recovered. End of year two, we had 15 recovered. End of year three, we had 40 recovered. By the end of year four, we had 100 recovered, and that's when the big book was published. End of year five, 400 recovered. End of year six, 2,000. End of year seven, 8,000. They were doing something right. It was exponential on the people that got recovered. What's the recovery rate now? That's one of the things that Chris is going to talk about. Right? Flip the page. It says on XX, page Roman numeral 20, it says, if alcoholics who came to A and really tried, 50% got sober all at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Other thousands came to a few AA meetings and at first decided they didn't want the program, but a great number of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. And that's where they're getting a 75% recovery rate. 50% never take another drop. 25% go out and have a couple slips, and then they come in and they get sober and they're sober the rest of their life. 25% come in, they experience some of the stuff and their life gets better. And they go back out drinking or whatever, you know, for whatever reason. Dr. Bob in the Good Old Timers, page 261, says, the records in Cleveland show a 93% of those who came to us never drank again. When I discovered that people had slips in AA, they really shook me up. Today it's all watered down so much anyone can wander in now. It only works with alcoholics. It was a pretty pure program back then. Nothing's changed, you know. AA Comes of Age, page 220, says, the second edition contains an interesting review of what actually happened. Of the 28 pioneer authors of the stories in the back in 1939 in the first edition, we find that 23 of them made a recovery from alcoholism. That's an 82% recovery rate of the stories. Of these, 15 never had even a single relapse. So that's 54%. That's where he's getting his numbers from. It clinches AA's claim that most any alcoholic who can continuously work the AA program has a better than a 3-to-1 chance of staying sober for his lifetime. Does an alcoholic who walks through that door today have a 3-to-1 chance of staying sober for the rest of his life? Not that I've seen. Nothing has changed. Our program has changed. You're going to hear that emphasis. All right? Dr. Bob in the Good Old Timers, page 211, says, Bill said, the Cleveland pioneers have pioneered 3 essential things. The value of personal sponsorship. Interesting. The worth of the AA book in indoctrinating newcomers, and finally the tremendous fact that AA, when the world really got around, could now soundly grow to great size. Interesting. Sponsorship and the big book. 2 critical pieces. If you don't have either one of those in your life, something's missing. And it may be the reason why the recovery rate isn't 2 out of 3. All right? On page 21, it says, the fourth sentence down, upon therapy for the alcoholic himself, we surely have no monopoly. Yet it is our great hope that all those who have yet found no answer may begin to find one of the pages of this book and will presently join us on the road to new freedom. What is he saying here? He's saying AA is the suggested program. Now, you'll hear people all the time in AA, and I call it one of the half-truths, who say, well, it's all just suggestions. And they'll say, well, I want to be step 1, I want to be step 3, I'll do a little bit of 4, none of 5, don't give me any 5, no 9, maybe a little 10, 11, 12. You know, I call it the smorgasbord. You know, the 12 steps that hang up on the wall, it's like an deli, you order it off the steps, off the wall. you know. And there's one of the great AA speakers that says, if you take the steps off the wall, you'll have an off the wall program, you know. And I kind of believe that, you know. There's a guy who's written about tremendously in our history book, a guy by the name of Dr. Harry Thiebaud. Not a whole lot of people have heard about him. He talks specifically about Alcoholics Anonymous and how the ego grows. Once we're sober, what is our biggest threat? He spoke at several of our international conventions. The problem is there's no talk about him in our big book. You've got to go back to our history books, and nobody ever likes to read the history books. So I want to read a couple quotes from Harry Thiebaud, which I think will blow your mind. Blew my mind when I read it. A comes of age, page 249. The assumption that one has all the answers, and the contrary, that one needs no answers, but just to follow A, are two indicators of trouble. In both cases, open-mindedness is noticeably absent. But it is perhaps not equally clear that it is the ego slowly making its comeback, which forces the descent from the pink cloud into the arena of life, where, with the help of AA, he can learn how to become a sober person and not an angel. The ego's capacity for rebirth is utterly astounding and must never be forgotten. As I continued my tour, it became even more apparent that in everyone's psyche there existed an uncomfortable ego which bitterly opposed any thought of defeat. Until that ego was somehow reduced or rendered ineffective, no likelihood of surrender could be anticipated. On page 249, it's common knowledge that return to full-fledged ego can happen at any time. Years of sobriety are no assurance against its resurgence. No AA, regardless of his veteran status, can ever relax his guard against the encroachment of the reviving ego. Halotosis, a reference to the smugness and self-complacency which is so easily can creep into the individual with years of sobriety behind him, nearly killed me. I got too good for AA. I knew all the answers. I was dangerous to myself and everybody that came in contact with me, you know. On page 250, it says, the single act of surrender can produce sobriety, but its stopping effect upon the ego. Unfortunately, that ego will return unless the individual learns to accept a disciplined way of life, which means a tendency for ego comeback is permanently checked. This is not new to AA members. They have learned that a single surrender is not enough. The 12 steps, repeated inventories, not just one, and 12-stepping itself, a routine reminder that one must work at deserving sobriety, are all essential. Moreover, it is referred to as 12-step work, which is actually what it is. But this time, the miracle is for the other fellow. Only through hard toil and labor can lasting results be obtained. Given us some warnings about what the ego can do to us. We don't pay attention to our own history. And here it is, right in front of the big book. Our program has changed. We don't have two recoveries out of every three people that show up here. It's not a 2-to-3 ratio anymore, you know. So why do I keep emphasizing the big book? Because in the 4rd to the 3rd edition, on page XXII, it says the 12 steps that summarize the program may be called Los Doce Pasos in one country, Les Doce Papes in another, but they trace exactly the same path to recovery that was blazed by the earliest members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what our goal here is going to be this weekend, right? Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Well, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be sharing our experience. And any time the Sigma talks about experience, pay attention. It doesn't talk about knowledge. It says knowledge is no good to you. This is the only arena in life where knowledge is not power. In the stock market, knowledge is power. In business, knowledge is power. In AA, knowledge will kill you. It's all about your experience. How does this stuff measure up? Well, one of the things that we've done is we've gone through and taken a look at what's actually in the big book. What is the program saying? What do we hear in meetings? And I call it cliches and half-truths. Did everybody get one of the handouts? It's a 3-page handout. You should all have one of those. These are consideration questions, and Chris is going to start over these consideration questions. These questions are designed for you to have an open mind. If you don't have one, Michael Pass will give you one. All right? These questions are for consideration. Now, the big thing that your ego is going to want to do, we just got done talking about ego, is your ego is going to want to initially answer the question like right off the bat. It's going to say, oh, I know the answer to this one. Don't do it. The power of this exercise is in the thought that takes place from the time you hear the question in your mind as you're reading it to yourself and the time that the answer comes to you. That consideration time is the important thing. Where is your experience in this? and I put little quotations with page numbers. That's where the area of the big book where I drew the question from. All right? So these are the things for you guys to take home with you tonight, you know, and if you feel like it, take a look at some of these questions. Or we're going to go over them right now. Think about them. And think about where you stand, you know, in this program. Before we do that, real quickly, how many people in this room, if I raise a hand, just so we get a feel of what we're dealing with, have had less than a year of sobriety? Okay. How many people have less than 5 years of sobriety? Okay. Less than 10 years of sobriety? Less than 15 years of sobriety? Less than 20? How many people have less than 25? Okay. 25 or more? Okay, we got one here in the back. Perfect, beautiful. It's a nice mix of early sobriety to old-timer status. Everybody gets to answer these questions for yourself. Compare it with your own experience. So, Chris, you're on.
Yes. One of the things I just want to hit on before we move into the consideration questions is a friend of ours from down in Texas Way, down there, the intergroup office keeps track of the chips that are sold. And down south, if anybody's familiar with this, they have what is known as the desire chip. That's like the 24-hour chip. And then they have a 1 month, a 2 month, a 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, and then multiples of a year. Now, what Dave was talking about earlier about recovery statistics, about there being a 75% recovery rate in Akron, I believe, is where they got that that statistic, and a 93% recovery rate in Cleveland. Just remember that they were doing something completely different than what goes on in general AA around my area, at least. In Houston, in 1999, they sold 16,285 desire chips. They sold 8,000 1 month chips. So that's a drop-off of about 50% in a month. They lost half of those people in a month, if you consider that everybody celebrates. 1 year chips, they sold 1,700. That's about 10% of the desired chips. So they lost 90% of the people in the first year. I'll skip all the way down to 15-year chips. They sold 110. That's 0.007% of the people who bought who got the desire chips. That's an incredibly terrible statistic if you look at it. That's, what is that, 7 people in 1,000?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely terrible. So what we're really interested in, again, I'll say it again, is we're interested in looking at the program of recovery that was creating the 75 and 93% recovery rates. That's what Dave and I are going to be looking at. It's very, very important, I think, for people's survival. I only believe that there's two reasons why you don't get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them is that you hear the message and choose to disregard it for one reason or another. And the other reason is you never hear the message. Now, we can't do anything about you disregarding the message, but we can certainly do something about giving you the message. And there are a lot of groups, at least around my area, where you do not hear the message. If they didn't read How It Works, you wouldn't hear AA for the whole hour. That's just the way it is. So we're very, very passionate about this. Now, I'm going to start reading some of these consideration questions. Don't answer right away. Take them back and make them part of your evening review or your morning meditation. Think about some of these. They're very, very important. Do you believe the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a textbook? If the Big Book is a textbook, do you believe it has test questions like other textbooks? Do you believe the purpose of the Big Book is to show other alcoholics precisely how to recover from their malady? Do you believe the Big Book has some other purpose? Do you believe that alcoholism and drug addiction are the same thing and that a drug is a drug is a drug? If you are a true addict and you use an addictive drug, are you still sober? How, if an addict uses a different addictive drug, caffeine or nicotine, are they still sober? Let's consider it again. Is a drug really a drug? If an alcoholic uses alcohol, beer, wine, or whiskey, are they sober and free from the craving? How about if an alcoholic uses just a little alcohol, Listerine, Moussey, extracts, Odul? Do you believe that you can be recovered from the disease of alcoholism? If you believe you can be recovered from alcoholism, do you believe you can be cured of alcoholism? Do you believe that you will always be recovering from alcoholism? If the alcoholic problem has been removed, how can you still be recovering? Do you believe alcoholism is a threefold disease, body, mind, or spirit? If alcoholism is a threefold disease, where does the problem center, the body, the mind, or the spirit? Does the remedy for alcoholism come from treating the alcoholic problem, or is recovery a byproduct from treating a different part of the alcoholic addiction? Is the drinking and the bottles the problem for the alcoholic, or only a symptom of the disease? If we quit drinking for good and for all, stopping altogether, or do we quit one day at a time? What do we have to do one day at a time, by the way? Is there ever a time the program of AA suggests that we take a drink? Here's a good one. I've noticed that there's really no place in the book that tells us not to drink, and there's a couple of places that tells us to go ahead. That's pretty revolutionary, you know. Do you believe the fellowship of AA by itself is enough for you to recover from alcoholism? Do you believe AA meetings treat alcoholism? Do you believe that your desire to stop drinking is your only requirement to stay sober? Just for a second here, I don't even pass the requirement for membership of Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. You want to know why? Because I don't have a desire to stop drinking. I stopped 10 years ago. Why would I want to stop drinking? I have a desire not to start. You know, that may get you through the door, but the term Alcoholics Anonymous might give you a clue about what the requirement for membership is, you know. Oh, duh. I mean, there is some thing we could read, you know. Anyway, I don't want to jump on that.
Chris doesn't judge.
No. Far be it from me. Do you believe you can stay sober on the basis of self-knowledge, that you can learn relapse prevention? Do you think remembering the pain of your last drink can keep you from drinking? Do you believe you have a choice as to whether you will drink again? Consider this, but don't answer right away. If you have a choice in whether you will drink again or not, then how can you truly be powerless if you still have a choice? You know, the people that say, I chose not to drink today, they're not an alcoholic of my type. B, if you choose, your will to choose, and you have given your will over to God, then how do you have a choice anymore as to whether you will drink again? Do you believe you can recover from alcoholism and stay sober on a non-spiritual basis? Do you believe you're suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer? Do you believe that your only two alternatives are to live spiritually or die an alcoholic death? There is no door number three. That's a hint. Anyway. Do you believe that the knowledge which comes from studying the big book of AA can produce a spiritual experience? To stop drinking. Do you believe that doing what is in the big book of AA can produce a spiritual experience sufficient to stop drinking? In reference to the first three steps, do you believe that you should look in the big book for the right answers or the right questions? Do you believe that alcohol is the greatest enemy? It destroys and kills more alcoholics than anything else? Do you believe that drinking alcohol is your problem? Do you believe that your alcoholic problems are of your own making? Do you believe that lack of power is your problem or dilemma? Do you believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to help you control your alcoholic problem? Do you believe that your sobriety requires you to think about yourself first, and that it can kill you if you aren't selfish and taking care of your sobriety first? I love that. It's a selfish program. The whole book is about getting us out of self. You know, I need to learn how to treat myself better, and then I'll get sober. Ridiculous. Do you believe that once you come into AA, your disease is arrested so long as you don't drink again? Do you believe that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of your troubles? Do you believe there are requirements as part of step one? Do you believe the action of the AA program starts in the second step or the third step? In the big book, we know where step three starts because it says, now we are at step three. Where are steps one and two located in the big book? We'll help you out with that one. Dave, why don't you go?
Okay. Do you believe there are requirements in the big book before taking the third step? Do you believe that God is part of our makeup and that deep down, the idea of God is in you? Do you believe when it comes to alcoholism and AA that God is everything? It's an interesting question. That God is everything? Do you believe that taking the third step is turning your will and your life over to the care of God? Or does the third step require only a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God? Does step three put into place a commitment for you to follow through with the rest of the AA program? Do you believe that it matters if step four is a written inventory? Do you believe that step four needs to be in columns, or is a written check-off-the-box inventory okay? Do you believe AA suggests that you stay away from relationships for the first year? Do you believe that there are no rules in AA? We all hear that all the time in meetings. There are no rules.
Nope.
I'm going to show you at least three. Do you believe you have to work on your character defects in step six and seven? Notice the key word there is you. Do you believe that the list in step eight is made when you write the four steps? Do you believe that the way we work in step nine with our family is by keeping sober ourselves? How many times have you heard that? Well, I make my amends to my family by just staying sober. Do you believe that there is a nine-step prayer where we're supposed to say daily as part of our amends to the family? Do you believe step nine is saying, I'm sorry for my misdeeds of the past? Do you believe that because they can't be seen, there is no way to make amends to people who have died? Do you believe that the first nine steps of AA only need to be worked once, and then you live in 10, 11, and 12 for the rest of your life? Do you believe that we commence steps 10, 11 as a way of life only after we have finished our ninth step? Do you believe that there are 12 questions that are supposed to be answered every day as part of your 11th step? Do you believe you have been convinced the other man is alcoholic? Wait a minute, try that one again. Do you believe you have to be convinced the other man is alcoholic during a 12-step call? Do you believe in step 12 we let the other man call us, we give him our phone number if he's interested in our help? Do you believe you can't go on a 12-step call until you have a year sober? I've heard that a lot. Oh, my sponsor won't let me go on a 12-step call until I got a year. Do you believe AA suggests that we have to stay away from people, places, and things, especially from places where alcohol is served? Do you believe the information presented in the Big Book of AA is a bunch of suggestions, or do you believe the AA program as a whole is a suggestion? And lastly, do you believe there are musts in AA? You know? Like we said earlier, those things are just designed to stir the pot a little bit, get you thinking, maybe even get you back in your Big Book tonight so you'll have some answers to some of those questions. Tomorrow we're going to start out with full contact AA. We're going to jump right into the doctor's opinion. We're going to look at step one, the three pieces of step one, craving, mental obsession, the spiritual malady, and then we're going to take a test. And we're going to see how you guys pass as to what you think step one is. Because I doubt there's a person in here who doesn't know what step one is. In their mind, they say, oh yeah, I got step one down. But we're going to challenge that and see if you really know in your heart of hearts what step one is all about. Because one of the things we're going to do this weekend is we're going to bring you right back to drinking on every single one of these steps. Every single one of the 12 steps ought to bring you right back to the hopelessness of step one, your powerlessness. You know, that's the reason we hear people in AA say, oh, yeah, I got nine-step amends, I've never made them. They had forgotten that that has something to do with living and drinking again. And our job is going to keep that in your mind, that the reason we're doing this work is because our life depends on it, you know. And we're going to have a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of joking, a lot of laughing, and I hope to see you guys all here tomorrow. We're going to start back up. What time we start back up tomorrow? At 9 o'clock. Physical craving starts at 9 o'clock. The prayer and meditation session in the morning is at 6:30. I highly suggest it if you never tried it. It's really kind of neat. They work with Chambers, Is That Much for His Highest, one of the original Oxford Group publications. And like everything else we're going to do here, why don't we close with a moment of silence, and then we'll say a quick thank you for this experience. One of the things I will encourage you to do is, since we're trying to have a new experience, whatever has transpired in this last hour, if it's touched you in some way, if it's got you thinking, got you questioning, enjoy the experience. To quote Mark Houston, he says, don't piss all over your experience. You know, don't ruin it by talking about it all the time. It's your own personal experience. Enjoy it. This is the only time you're going to get this experience in life, right here, right now. Enjoy it. If you have some questions, think about them. We're here to stir the pot a little bit tonight. And that's the whole reason we did this, to get rid of some of the history, and before we really get into the steps tomorrow, we're going to go fast and furious through this stuff. And you're going to have some neat experiences. But kind of keep it close to the vest, you know. Talk with each other, talk about everything else, but don't pick apart the experience because you'll ruin it for yourself. I've done it, and my experience is, don't ruin it. Enjoy it. It's like the first time you go through the steps. It's only one time you're ever going to go through the steps for the first time. Enjoy it while you get the chance. You know, it's a neat experience. So why don't we get quiet, and Chris, you want to take us out?